Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Infernal Brains podcast. I'm Tars Tarkas from TarsTarkas.net.
And I'm Todd Statman from Die Danger, Die Die Kill, aka 40K. And today we have a first in the history of the Infernal Brains podcast. We have a special guest. It is not one of the puppets from Discount Puppet Explosion. It is Durian Dave, author of the blog Soft Film, and also the host of the Connie Chan website, Movie Fan Princess. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Very honored to be here. I hope I am as interesting as the puppet guest that couldn't show up tonight.
Mm-hmm. You can earn your brain certificate today.
Oh.
Yeah, we have a swag bag to give you when this is all done. Yeah.
So this means I'm now an honorary Infernal Brain?
Yes, it does.
Cool, very cool.
You'll feel the swelling start to happen soon after the
recording. I'm already feeling a little something.
So, Dave, you can probably, I know that you have retired or at least taking a long hiatus from doing Soft Film, but it's still up there for people to enjoy, and I would definitely recommend it because it's filled with tons of good info and stuff, and I'm already describing it badly. So why don't you tell us about Soft Film?
Well, I'm going to actually start describing with my my Connie Chan website, which is my entry into the the wild world of the web. And I've been watching Hong Kong movies for a long time, and somehow became interested by the history of Hong Kong film and found out about some of the great stars of the 60s, one of whom, the biggest, undoubtedly, is Connie Chan, who was the consummate teen idol in Cantonese cinema during the 60s. And I just became so enthralled with her, I decided to create a website in English devoted to her and her films.
Which is still the only one, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I guess it's kind of a niche. Uh-huh. She's pretty much a niche star still. I think mostly, actually, because not many of her films are available with English subtitles.
And right.
I've always felt, you know, if more of her films were available in good quality with subtitles, that she could, you know, gain bigger recognition among Western fans. And that was kind of the point of the website, was to, you know, tell people about her and, you know, hopefully get them interested, even though her films aren't subtitled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it worked. Look, there's three of us here.
Yeah. So.
Yes.
She's tripled in popularity.
So I did that for a few years. And then, of course, I'm interested in other, Hong Kong stars besides Connie Chan. And so I started the blog Soft Film to just explore all the interests I'd sort of repressed when I was doing my Connie Chan website, because Connie Chan's very much a girl next door kind of star and is known as a jade girl, which is a kind of figure in Chinese film and TV of basically is the girl next door.
Right, sort of a wholesome.
Yeah, wholesome,
yeah,
pure.
Yeah.
And I like, one of my other favorite stars is Fanny Fan.
Who's the opposite of that?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, she, might have been one of the first, Hong Kong stars to disrobe on film.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Soft Film blog, it definitely is, I still, of course, blog about Connie Chan and other jade girls, but I also talk about some of the bad girls of Hong Kong cinema.
Mm-hmm. And the focus is mostly 50s and 60s, heavy focus on the 60s.
Yeah, I would say almost never go past the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just sort of a reflection of my personal interest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against the 70s or the 80s.
No, I get it. There's a lot to focus on in the 60s. I mean, there's really, once you get into that, there's almost no reason to move beyond it because there's always deeper sort of burrows in films. So, well, obviously the fact that David is here means that we're going to be talking about Hong Kong films.
Yeah.
And actually, which is the reason we all know each other. I mean, I got to know you through your Connie Chan site.
Yeah, in fact, I think both of you guys got to know me through by looking for the Black Rose.
Looking for the Black Rose, yes.
Yeah.
Which we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah. We're going to be... Nick, do you want to say a little about what our theme for this evening
all
together for us?
If you haven't guessed by now, our theme is what's collectively become known as Jane Bond films. They're female-focused action films that became popular in the late 1960s in Cantonese cinema, starring the big starlets of the day. They feature the female leads as modern evolutions of the virtuous swordswoman archetype, dealing with criminal gangs, corrupt cops, and evil businessmen. As the genre grew more popular, Mandarin films made their own versions with their own flair. We'll get more in depth with the descriptions as we go into the films, because the best way to describe it is to just go through the cinema as it happened.
Oh, so we're going to do that now? Is that what happens now?
Let's do it.
Yes. All right. So I guess we're going to start out talking about The Black Rose, because as you said, that I found you... I became interested in The Black Rose. It grew out of my fixation with Cho Yoon, who is the director who did a lot of the really great, very lush fantasy wuxia films for Shaw Brothers in the 70s, movies like The Magic Blade and Clans of Intrigue. And I became obsessed with those films, but then I learned that he had this whole other career in Cantonese films during the 60s. He was a very prolific director at that time, and then I found out about this film, The Black Rose, which was a masked heroine film that, from what I understood about it, was one of the first Cantonese films to have these kind of modish, sort of James Bond modern influences, and, you know, that's my meat, basically, so I became obsessed with it, and then, in the course of that, found the Movie Fan Princess site and got in touch with David, who it turned out actually lived in San Francisco as well, and a beautiful relationship began. So
that's kind of cool. I didn't know that you were introduced to The Black Rose through Cho Yoon's wuxia films.
Yeah.
Because for me, I was sort of introduced to The Black Rose through the retro nostalgic remakes and spoofs that were made in Hong Kong during the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Legendary Black Rose, and then there's a Black Rose 2.
Right.
And so they're part of the Hong Kong sort of, you know, postmodern, you know, nonsense comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But spoofing all these films from the 60s, and Black Rose, it turns out, is kind of like, I guess, the iconic 1960s Hong Kong film.
Yeah, it seems like
I mean, it's so much a part of Hong Kong popular culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like everyone you talk to is older. They know the film, even if...
Right.
Yeah. You know, even if they haven't seen it in years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people I asked if they were under 30 or under 40, they would basically say, my parents love that movie. I heard that a lot from people.
Cool. Yeah. So, and I first ran across it with the 2004 movie by the twins, the protege De La Rose Noir, but I knew there was earlier films. I didn't know too much about them and didn't do too much research until a couple years later when Hong Kong Film Archive did a Jane Bond retrospective, and then they had a list of all these films, and I was like, whoa, these are awesome, and I started looking them up, and the only websites about them were on Todd and Dave's websites, and amazingly, we all live in the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. Yeah, I was mentioning the other day, in the course of like researching for this episode, I keep doing web searches for these movies, and I just kept landing on you guys' websites. There still really isn't that much
else
out
too.
There.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember seeing that program, and I think that program for that film festival, wasn't that written by Sam Ho, the guy who coined the Jane?
Yeah, he was, I don't know if he still is, but he was a programmer at the Hong Kong Film Archive.
Okay, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's the guy who came up with the term Jane Bond. It's a retroactive sort of a catch-all for these movies, but it was definitely a very big trend in Hong Kong cinema during the during the mid to late 60s, and it seemed the ground zero for it, or the genesis of it, definitely occurred within Cantonese cinema.
Yeah, and we'll talk a bit about the sort of the genesis or the tradition of this genre. The name Jane Bond, although catchy and evocative of that, you know, swinging era of the 60s, is a little misleading because this figure is not really just this Chinese female equivalent of James Bond.
Right.
It draws a lot on, you know, various traditions within Chinese film, and actually stays, I would say, pretty close to those, with the exception that the genre became modernized by borrowing elements from James Bond and the other spy films that were popular around the world at that time.
Yeah, it's more of like a pulpy, modern feel instead of a spy movie. There are some that are spy movies, but a lot of times she's not a spy. She's just a thief or just a girl who does stuff. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, The Black Rose is a good example because the heroine of The Black Rose, it's basically an altruistic thief. You know, she's sort of a Robin Hood type character who robs from the poor and gives to the rich. Or no, robs from the rich and gives to the poor.
We're
all trying to bring our best game tonight, obviously. We're feeling the pressure. But it feels like it's a very traditional kind of character, you know, that you see, you know, like a folkloric kind of character. But, and you see it in Wuxia films as well, and in written folklore as well. But
yeah. At least 1,500 years, according in the past, to stuff with the old female swordswoman mythology, the New Zha type stuff.
Yeah, and I think that, for Western fans, the figure of the swordswoman is pretty exciting because there's no real strong tradition of that in American film. Or, I don't know, I don't really know of any other strong tradition of that. But
there was like a brief period where there were female gunfighter westerns in the 50s.
Yeah, maybe I think a few swashbuckler.
But it was always, those movies like Johnny Guitar and stuff like that, they really played on the novelty of it being a woman. But especially in these Cantonese films, it was sort of a given. I mean, if you were
It's totally normal.
Yeah. If you were going to see a swordplay film in the 60s in Hong Kong, you were kind of assuming that you were going to be seeing a female protagonist. I mean, I think especially in the Cantonese films, because they played to a predominantly female audience as well. And that's one of the things that makes especially these Cantonese films really stand out, is not only that they're women in action, but the way that they're portrayed. It's not like, you know, obviously there's a tradition, or not so much a tradition, but in Western spy films, sort of these Modesty Blaze or Emma Peel and the Avengers, these kick-ass females, but they're always, you know, they're always very sexualized. And in these Cantonese movies, they're not really, it's not portrayed that way. It's a lot more of a sober presentation, and there's the sense that they're more being just presented as role models.
Yeah, in fact, maybe even the opposite. They're all often very virtuous.
Yeah,
if the leading man, you know, tries to, you know, come on to them romantically, they'll, you know, push them away or...
Well, like you said, it's the Jade Girl. I mean, the biggest stars of the genre were Connie Chan and Josephine Hsiao, who were both definitely pushed into that mold or fit that mold. So, it's kind of jarring. Even these movies where the women are portrayed as kind of badasses, there's this kind of tension because they're, you know, well, I'm thinking like The Professional with Josephine Hsiao. She's very cocky in it. She throws a lot of tude.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, a lot of these films with her and Connie Chan have musical numbers. And I remember the scene where she's in the bar and she first meets the leading man, and she's this very mysterious kind of hard-ass woman, and she's just kind of tossing off lines. And then she goes up on, there's like a guitar band playing on stage, there's like a combo, and she walks up on stage and takes the guitar from the guy, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. So I thought she was going to do some like Dick Dale like pipeline, like nar, 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 nar. But then she does this completely prim like waltz time You know, there's no subtitles, but it sounds like she was probably singing about dating etiquette and doing this little two-step, and it was very jarring in contrast to the portrayal that she was doing.
Yeah, that's both Josephine Hsiao and Connie Chan. Yeah, they were very much role models, and they weren't, I mean, I think sometimes they played with the bad girl image a little bit, but they definitely both come from, they grew up during the conservative era of Cantonese film. Like during the 50s, Cantonese film was considered very conservative, whereas the Mandarin film, which was essentially a transplant from Shanghai, was always a lot more cosmopolitan, you know, more sexy, more glamorous. The Cantonese film was just very grassroots and homegrown,
and completely local in its audience too.
Yeah, I mean,
those films didn't really leave Hong Kong.
They did a little bit, I think, especially in the 60s with Connie Chan's films. I mean, she was really big in Singapore, which had there were people there who were of Cantonese origin,
right?
But the the main audience for Cantonese films was Hong Kong,
right?
Whereas with the Mandarin films, they had a wider reach,
right?
You know?
Well, I mean, Mandarin being the Shaw brothers were a Mandarin film studio.
Yeah,
Cathay were, you know, the big studios were Mandarin language, and their films went all throughout Asia.
Yeah, throughout Southeast Asia and Taiwan.
So we'll just jump right in with 1965's Black Rose, which is a modern retelling of the chivalrous thief or chivalrous female warrior tales set in modern 1960s Hong Kong. Black Rose herself is a thief who steals from the rich and gives to the poor, and there's actually two Black Roses, which are the sisters. One's played by Connie Chan, the other is played by Nam Hung.
Connie Chan being sort of she's more of a sidekick role in this movie.
Yeah.
And Nam Hung is more of she was already a pretty big established star.
Yeah, she was an established star.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's...
Actually, I might say she's married to Choi Yun.
Choi Yun, yes. Yeah. Was she married to him at that time?
I'm not sure of that. I don't know. But I think they were together because this film was produced by her production company.
Right. Was it the Rose Production Company?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And there's a long history of husband, wife, producer, movie star teams where the wife stars in the husband's films. Dates back to the 20s, at least, as far as I could find. But jumping to the 60s before this gets 8 hours long.
Right, exactly. But like we were saying, we're pulling these under the umbrella of Jane Bond, but Black Rose is definitely, I think most people who would watch it wouldn't scream James Bond at them, but I think for Cantonese cinema at the time, it was fairly radical in taking the narrative traditions that it was using and putting them in a modern context and using some kind of modish elements. There are some sort of Bondian things. There's secret passageways and things like that.
Yeah, it's closer to like Catwoman from the Batman films versus like James Bond's.
But. Right. But it also, I mean, David, do you want to talk about the sort of tradition that it harks back to?
Yeah, there's, you know, as Nick mentioned, there actually these, you know, a lot of these stories are basically just modern day versions of the Nusha character, which is the swordswoman character, which, you know, was popular in literature and film, and the just updated to a modern setting using you know guns instead of swords, but the same ideas of upholding very personal sense of justice and sort of fighting against the establishment. Because in The Black Rose, the two characters, they go around robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. And this is because they were orphaned at a young age. I think their parents owned a circus and some rich person did them wrong.
Right.
Caused their family to, you know, become bankrupt and fall apart, and right. so they vowed to give it to the man, basically. Right. And
yeah, there's a pretty unsubtle class war subtext in this movie. Yeah. I mean, the very first scene, you have this fancy dress ball attended by all these rich folks, and they're all wearing these really grotesque kind of porcine masks. And even though the heroines, I mean, they're wealthy and they sort of move among the rich, but sort of the joke of the opening scene is that, you know, while the rich people are wearing masks, the two sisters who are the Black Rose are wearing masks, as you know, masquerading as one of them, whereas yeah. mm-hmm. they're actually working against them behind the scenes.
That kind of double deception.
Yeah.
So they're masquerading as themselves, the Black Rose.
Right.
And actually, the people
yeah,
there
yeah.
realize that they
yeah.
are indeed truly the Black Rose.
Right. She shows up. Yeah. Nam Hong shows up at her own party, dresses the Black Rose. The rich people freak out. And of course, because it's a party filled with rich people, there are police there. That's what I loved
yeah.
about how immediately the police show up, you know, just like in real life, you
yeah.
know. To arrest her, but then she takes off the mask and says, "Oh, this is just my costume."
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah,
she was screwing with them, in other words. So.
Yeah, so there's actually a character called Wang Ong. That's the name of the character in Cantonese, and it's basically the word for the oriole, the bird. So she's also known in English as Oriole, the heroine. And she was also a Robin Hood-type character, helping the poor. And she had two sidekicks. And this was a fictional character from a detective series in late 1940s Shanghai. And
mm-hmm.
that got transplanted to Hong Kong and became very popular in Hong Kong as well.
Mm-hmm.
And film adaptations were made in the late 50s, starring Yu So Chow, who was the martial arts queen of Hong Kong during the 50s, and she played Oriole, the heroine.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also Wu Laiju, who went all the way back to 1930s Shanghai. She made
mm-hmm.
Wuxia films and also made these kind of patriotic action films, because at
mm-hmm.
the time, China was being attacked by Japan.
Yeah.
And so she was kind of the grandmother
mm-hmm.
of Hong Kong's female action heroines. And so she played one of the sidekicks,
mm.
and one of the other sidekicks was played by Yang Yin, who was also a big martial arts star during
mm.
the 50s. And so these films were, I think, quite popular. There were about half a dozen between 1959 and 1962.
Mm.
And one of the key components of this was, you know, not surprisingly, a lot of action and fight scenes, because
mm-hmm.
all three actresses were skilled in doing that. These films, I think, really are the sort of precursor to
right.
to the Black Rose.
Until recently, the only one that we thought was available was the final film in that series, which is the blonde-haired monster.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I've seen, which I think all of us have watched.
Yes.
I mean, I've watched the DVD that's missing, an entire,
yeah.
or the VCD that's missing entire reel, but that's a pretty wild movie. I mean, I wonder, there's a lot of fantasy elements. I mean, there are parts of it that actually remind me almost of a Lucha film. There's
mm-hmm.
a guy that
yeah.
gets, you know, turned into an ape. There's like a man to ape sort of mad scientist
yeah.
scene where a guy gets hooked, gets a blood transfusion from an ape, turns into an ape, and then there's like a sort of this ghostly villainous with a skull mask with a
yeah.
torture chamber. Is that just like classic pulp elements, basically? Is that what the other films are like? Do they have those kind of spook show elements that are in that film?
That I know of. I actually found one of the earlier films on Youku, which is basically the Chinese version of YouTube. And that was from a television broadcast in Hong Kong of the film. And that one, it was quite conventional, actually. The three ladies are helping a woman who comes to them because her brother and sister-in-law are in trouble with some gangsters because
mm-hmm.
of IOUs that
mm-hmm. yeah.
they received from borrowing money so they could gamble.
Uh-huh.
So it's very you know, down to earth, has
very
nothing
prosaic,
to do with monsters or spies, and very much kind of a traditional Candies film of that era, dealing with sort of day-to-day life and problems, except you have these three fighting ladies who rise to the occasion and set everything right.
And as you were talking about, and from what I saw in The Blonde-Haired Monster, they are all presenting sort of an archetype that sort of seems radical to us in the West of these kick-ass females. They also present a very conservative image, you know, and the one there, as I was saying to you, the Oriole and her two sidekicks, they were, in that movie, they were matching vests with their initials on the pocket, and they're very prim. They almost seem like a Girl Scout or Brownie troop, except, you know, a kung fu fighting
troop. They're definitely not Red Sonja or...
The
West, you know, the way... They sort of treat the woman warrior as skimpily, but
They're not like in the current like straight to video Japanese movies where they'd be played by some, you know, porn star or something like that. Yeah, it's kind of long.
It's pretty cool. They're all dressed, I don't know, maybe a little butch, except it doesn't come off as butch.
Right.
It's very wholesome, but dressed in practical pants and sweaters.
Right. It's sort of like, you could see them as the, leading calisthenics or something like that.
I mean, I think good clothes to wear if you need to, kick someone's butt, you know, when you're wearing dress and high heels.
But from that, you can see you didn't really have to mess with the formula that much to be sort of radically departing from it, you know. Whereas Black Rose takes that a little further. It's a little more modish. There's definitely a little more emphasis on sort of, just a little bit more emphasis on sort of the jet set mentality. The two sisters live in an apartment with very mod furnishings, and there's like a wall size abstract painting on the wall and things like that. But that was just sort of the beginning. They sort of, when they moved on to the next film, that sort of upped the ante a little bit as far as the sort of classic 60s spy movie tropes.
Yeah, well, the sequel to Black Rose, Spy With My Face, is kind of, I mean, to me, it's kind of a spoof of James Bond films. Almost made with a sort of realization that there's no way we can make a movie like a James Bond film. Mm-hmm. So we'll just kind of spoof it. Because it has the same characters, but it's that sort of noirish atmosphere, which is so great. And the original is completely discarded here. And instead, it's almost, I almost take it as a sort of comedy, you know, with
action bits thrown in. Yeah, I did want to say that. I mean, the thing that I loved about the Black Rose, I mean, that it does have that. It's a very elegant film. It's very noirish. It's very stylish. It's very romantic. In a lot of ways, it feels like a Hollywood film from the 30s or 40s. And that's what. And I love that what Cho-Yoon brought to it. It's that sort of those classic pulp elements married with that kind of romanticism. And then when they moved on to Spy With My Face, which was a film unlike Black Rose, which was shot in black and white, Spy With My Face was shot in color, even though the available VCD of it is in black and white for some reason. And definitely a much different, a much flatter visual approach, almost like a TV, kind of looks like a TV show. Yeah, and very jokey. These films are generally made with very low budgets, but Black Rose compensated for that with like very rich compositions. And so it doesn't look cheap because it's just, it feels very lush. But this film definitely, they do kind of, the secret lair and everything looks, you know, very, very cardboardy, very sort of school play level sets.
Yeah, it's like they were trying to use the color to overwhelm you with just the color and then make it look like comic book style fantasy.
But it is kind of like one of those instances of, you know, careful if you make that face because it might get stuck that way. Because it did seem like they are kind of making fun of those movies, but the elements that are in it became more and more a part of the other contemporary female action films that would be made. In fact, Connie Chan, who was in the sidekick role in these movies, definitely in the second film takes more of a front and center role. And then she would go on to be front and center in a lot of these, what we call the Jane Bond movies, including a series that was called the Lady Bond films. And
the Lady Bond film, which came out in I think August 1966, I think you can consider that the sort of the actual formal birth of the genre, mm-hmm. and you know, receiving that sort of Bond designation, even though the Chinese title literally translates as, you know, female killer or assassin. Mm-hmm. And it was a popular series of films. There were four films in total. And I think it was really one of the films that sort of jump-started the Jane Bond genre.
Right.
Actually, that this film was my introduction to Connie Chan. My first visit to Hong Kong, almost about 10 years ago, I was at the Hong Kong Film Archive, and they had a film program about the representation of women in Hong Kong film. Mm-hmm. And in the exhibition space, they had a clip of the opening sequence to Lady Bond, which has Connie singing the Lady Bond theme song,
mm-hmm.
in a split screen appearance, showing her in three different guises. Mm-hmm. One dressed up as kind of this, you know, average young lady, looks like a secretary or mm-hmm. something. Or, you know, the girl next door, and then there's Connie dressed up in drag in a suit, which she was so wont to do in many of her films.
Yes, she did. Yeah, mm-hmm. She's either masquerading as a man, or she. And then in one of the films, she actually plays her own brother.
Yes. Yeah. And then the other figure was her in full Lady Bond garb, which was basically the black cat suit with a mask. And I saw that. It was very cool. You know, something, you know, very exciting because it's so different, but also it's very wholesome and charming. And so that's kind of what first hooked me on Connie Chan and led me down this long
the
path of obsession with her career.
And then you actually, I mean, I should also mention that, like, a lot of these avenues of film that we travel down on these podcasts, a lot of these films are either lost or not generally accessible to the public. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, the Lady Bond films are conspicuously absent
mm-hmm.
from DVD, and they are sometimes screened at the Hong Kong Film Archive, and you can watch them at their resource center, but from what I understand, there's some issues with either the copyright holder or perhaps the donor of the
mm-hmm.
prints,
which
prevents them being available more publicly.
Right. But you did have the opportunity to see one of the films.
Yeah, I think I saw the first two ones.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're good.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say they're particularly different or outstanding from her other Lady Bond type films.
Yeah. I mean, you will find.
But they were the first ones, ones to start doing
they
this.
Kind of set the template. Because you do find if you watch enough of these movies, they're pretty similar. They're pretty. There's definitely exceptions, and we'll talk about those, but they're fairly formulaic. And do the Lady Bond films, is she a masked hero in that as well? Or
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, you're not sure if it's the same actual character from film to film, or if it's just a sort of title that gets passed along.
Because that's something that I think that would also be, you know, we're calling these Jane Bond films, and I think someone coming in these cold, you know, with that understanding that they're called Jane Bond films, that might, a lot of them feature the cots or the masked heroes, you know, the Black Rose or these hooded figures, almost sort of super heroines, which is not really, that's not really a James Bond thing either. But I totally forgot where I was going with that.
Well, yeah, there's lots, if you like masks.
If you like,
masked,
I like
masked
that's
heroes.
What, that's
masked
what
heroes.
I like masks.
Yeah.
That you will be happy with these films because they do show up a lot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, what I was going to say is it actually, to me, harkens back to, it reminds me of movie serials and figures like Zorro and Masked Avengers and like
mm-hmm.
Old Republic serials. And that there seemed to be a lot of that going on in the Black Rose and some of these other movies.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's kind of good to remember that at the time, you know, most people in Hong Kong they started television broadcasting, but it was still a luxury
mm-hmm.
for most people.
Yeah.
So these films, which were cranked out,
right,
you know, at incredible rates,
right,
were kind of the weekly entertainment for,
right.
for people.
And they literally were. I mean, these films were usually cranked out in about a week's time, and they wouldn't stay in the theater very long. And just they'd usher them out and usher in something new. So,
yeah.
So as the Jane Bond or Lady Bond archetype is developed by Connie Chan, it begins to spread to other actresses as everyone rushes to cash in and make their money off these films. The main contemporary to Connie Chan at the time was Josephine Hsiao. While Connie Chan was starring in films in 65 and 66, Josephine didn't really move into it until around 1967, where she made a couple of entries, the aforementioned The Professionals, and also another film called Golden Skeleton.
She made a lot. I mean, 1967 seems like that was like when this whole trend reached critical mass. It seems like when we look at these movies, it's like trying to sort them out chronologically. It's like you have a few movies like Black Rose in 65, a few movies in 66, and then in 1967, it's like just tons. Connie Chan made like over 30 films in 1967.
Yeah, not all of those
not
were.
All, yeah.
But I think there were about, you know, three dozen Jane Bond type films made during 67, most of them by Connie Chan and Josephine Hsiao.
Right.
Yeah. Those films, they range from like the more just modern action type films, and then Golden Skeleton is more spy James Bond inspired with criminal gang that has a mass leader and minions who are wearing outfits with bug-eyed helmets.
Right.
And
yeah, it feels a lot like more like one of the Shaw Brothers spy movies. More like in a straight attempt to do a James Bond film, but with a bigger role for Josephine Hsiao.
Yeah.
It's tough with her because there's just so few of her Jane Bond movies are available. She made a lot of them.
Two, basically.
Not,
those
are just the only two.
Yeah, the rest of you have just cool-looking stills that Dave has, like the Lady Killer, which is known as Batgirl because she's basically dressed as Batgirl. And I want to see that so bad.
Yeah. And then there was another one Cho Yoon did that was like The Precious Mirror.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is another
one think,
where she plays
that,
kind of a cat
didn't
burglar.
They show that at the
that was,
Film
yeah,
Archive as part
yes.
of their Lady
yeah.
Bond program.
So, okay, that does exist, but it's locked up. It might be another one of those ones that Cho Yoon is sitting on, because I know he owns the Black Rose and seems to be stingy about letting it out of his grasp. I'm just saying this because I know Cho Yoon is going to listen to this podcast. You know?
He'll send me another legal threat.
I mean, you haven't been sued in 2012 yet, so we got to get it started.
I haven't seen The Professionals, but I loved Golden Skeleton.
Golden Skeleton.
And I highly recommend you watching it on YouTube, because that's the only way you're going to see it. So.
Yeah, that's a really fun, another movie in color, and it uses the color to colorful effect.
Yeah, I think those two movies actually make a good double bill, because the Professionals is a little more of the kind of old school Jane Bond type of film, you know, closer to say Black Rose,
right?
Gold Skeleton is to James Bond,
right?
Although it does have this really cool opening sequence of Josephine Hsiao, you know, dressed in these like psychedelic print pants with like a pirate's blouse and sharpshooting
pistols
at the viewer as the credit period to this really cool
drum beat. There's some great kind of surfy guitar music. The Professionals is definitely a more sober film. It doesn't have quite the sort of freewheeling feeling of some of the later spy type movies. It's actually kind of got more of a noirish feel. It's a revenge drama, got a thriller, some thriller aspects to it. Very nicely shot film. Mm-hmm. But it does have, you know, there's an underground lair that the villains have with the sliding doors and all that stuff. So there's definitely some of those elements. Definitely not as comic booky as Golden Skeleton and some of the other movies. And it's definitely as some of the Shaw Brothers movies.
Yeah,
Golden Skeleton is also pretty racy. That kind of surprised me for a Cantonese film, like the lady who gets her dress ripped off and just walks around in her underwear for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I think they were
shocking
trying to compete with Shaw Brothers on that front too, when they had to, you know, actually bring in newer actresses to, that would be willing to do that. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
because you wouldn't catch Connie or Josephine dead doing that.
So. No, that would never happen. But it's funny, once you get used to watching these kind of films that are sort of from these very conservative cultures, it's kind of like the Bollywood movies. Once you get used to watching those, when you see someone almost kiss, it's like really scandalizing. Mm-hmm. You know, even though you were just watching some Norfumi Suzuki pinky violence movie right before a Bollywood movie, it's like, oh my god, her sari's so wet.
It's all in the imagination.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, the point about, I think it is true that there was that sort of influence from the West with the James Bond films, mm-hmm. to have, you know, kind of sexier elements.
Right.
And those were especially more prominent in the, you know, the Shaw Brothers films.
Right.
And
yeah.
There's also the films of So Ching, who was sort mm-hmm. of a minor Jane Bond star. I'm not quite sure what the deal is with her or her films.
Right. Yeah, there's not a lot of information about her out there.
Yeah.
And she didn't make a whole lot of films either.
Yeah, but her first Jane Bond film, she made a couple, actually, two Wuxia films with Josephine Hsiao
mm.
prior to this. So this film, Gold Button.
Gold Button.
Yeah. You see where it's
not
coming from.
Not to be confused with. But we should also mention, too, that like another tie to the James Bond movies is that almost all of these movies borrow very heavily from the original soundtracks to the James Bond
yes.
movies. So don't be surprised if when watching one of these movies, you actually hear the actual James Bond theme playing,
mm-hmm. yeah.
or the theme from Goldfinger playing in the background. Yeah. Very common. It was in the So Ching movies. It was in the Gold Skeleton.
I think the James Bond theme has been featured in films from every single genre we've talked about so far in episodes.
Yes,
Infernal Brains.
It's a common
the most stolen film theme in the world.
Yeah, I watched some of. I didn't watch all of Gold Button, but it was enjoyable. So Ching, not as, you know, I didn't find her as charismatic or charming as Connie Chan or Josephine Hsiao. I mean, Connie Chan is an extremely
mm-hmm.
charming screen personality,
yeah.
so it's kind of
mm-hmm.
hard to
yeah.
to top her. And Josephine Hsiao mm-hmm. has a lot of. She's very good at, like I said, she has a really good toot. She's maybe,
mm-hmm.
she doesn't have the martial arts skill,
yeah.
but she definitely
yeah.
throws an attitude.
Yeah.
She can
yeah.
convince you that she's tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Ching, okay, you know, likable, but it just doesn't command.
Yeah,
so.
I would have to agree. I mean, I was excited to see it just because of its rarity.
Yeah.
And what was interesting for me about the film is there are elements, kind of these sexy elements, which would pop up the next year in Angel with the Iron Fist
mm-hmm.
and, you know, be picked mm-hmm. up in some of the Cantonese films and then, you know, even later on in a film like Temptress of a Thousand Faces.
Right.
So yeah. there's this great scene in Gold Button where So Ching is like been captured by the bad guys who in this film,
the Devil Gang,
yeah. they are also in special mm-hmm. outfits and wear masks and,
mm-hmm.
and the female minions are dressed in these sort of modest one-piece
yes.
swimsuits.
Yeah, it's just like the girls' swim team with
yeah.
these bathing suits.
But there are seven of them surround her and want to force her to disrobe and to change into...
Right, to wear the one-piece
official
swimsuit of evil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, she fights them all off, and then the evil mastermind sends in these four, like, towering giants who inexplicably... Their faces are painted with like green face paint,
yeah.
you know, they almost look, you know, like some weird zombie or something, and kind of, you know, it's implied he basically threatens her with rape.
Right.
So if you don't, you know, voluntarily switch into this swimsuit, you know, these guys are going to tear your clothes off. And
right.
I'm not responsible for anything else that might happen after that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then she does. Which was a little disappointing on my end. I
right.
I think if it were Connie Chan
would not
like,
have happened.
Yeah. Defeated the four, you know, green faced giants.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, but that never would happen. So as we've been kind of referring to already, around 1967, late 66, Shaw Brothers, the big Mandarin studio, started getting into making spy films themselves. Of course, in 1967, pretty much every functioning film industry in the world, and especially Asia, was making knockoffs of the James Bond movies, or at least their own answers to it. There was films coming out of the Philippines and Singapore and Malaysia, and also a lot of films come in South Asia as well. Shaw did a lot of, while they did films that were more traditional approaches to the Bond genre, more male-centered, I think the fact that these Jane Bond movies were so popular in Hong Kong led them to make more of those films female-centered than they might have been otherwise. So you had films like the Angel with the Iron Fist films that we mentioned that starred Lily Ho, and Temptress of a Thousand Faces, which we've already mentioned. Shaw had a lot more leeway, a little more license as far as making their films sexier. So definitely these were more in the sort of Western mold of, even though these would be female protagonists, they were a lot more sexualized. Lily Ho goes through, you know, many, many costume changes. You know, there's always the bikini scene. Temptress of a Thousand Faces is like a panty fetishist, you know, ideal spy film.
Yeah, it's a lot of fan service.
Yeah, a lot of fan service. Great, great, great film, but almost like a... sort of a, almost like a body parody of one of the Jane Bond films. You know, it's like sort of the opposite. You know, even though it's very female driven, even the villain is female. It's very naughty, very self consciously naughty. And watching those films, as enjoyable as they are, you see what's really unique about the Cantonese films and the way that the women are presented in them. You know, we can go back and talk about some of those films, some of the Shaw Brothers films more, but still more to be covered on the Cantonese front, and among those are some of my favorites, which are the Dark Heroine Muk Lan Fa films, which star an actress named Sut Ni. Is that right? We're doing our best with the pronunciations here, people. We really are.
Sut Ni.
Sut Ni. Yeah. Okay.
We just debated whether to bring this up, but evidently, according to a movie magazine of the time, her English name was Sydney.
Sydney Hung, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sydney Hung. Yeah. But we just call her Sydney.
Yeah, Sydney.
We've known her so long. It's
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel like
Sydney Hung's a whole new person.
And she's very interesting. I mean, the Muk Lan Fa film star.
Oh, can I just interrupt you?
Yeah, another
just a little. No, just a little anecdote.
Yes.
Sydney is. I first saw her in a Connie Chan film called Dragon Fortress, I think, from 1969. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first Connie Chan films I actually bought and owned when I got it when I was in Hong Kong on my trip. And believe it or not, I actually fell in love with Sut Ne first then rather than Connie, because Connie played the total good girl like she always does. But by this time in 1969, it seemed a little stale.
A little labored.
And Sut Ne played the bad girl, she was like kind of a stepsister of Connie Chan's character who was not fairly treated by the mother. And and she just really blew me away. First of all, she has a super sexy low voice and has these great kind of snarls. And
she's really ferocious.
You know, glaring eyes and, you know, very pretty, but she, you know, can be very fierce. And I think that shows up to great effect in the Muk Lan Fa films.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Those really stand out. I mean, one of the things about Sut Ne is that she was not quite the level of, didn't have the same kind of stardom as Connie Chan or Josephine Hsiao. I mean, Connie Chan and Josephine Hsiao were part of what was called the seven Cantonese princesses, or sort of this royalty of Cantonese cinema. These, all of which I assume sort of conformed to the Jade Girl archetype.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, both Connie and Josephine were child stars.
Right.
They grew up making films. They often, in the early to mid-60s, they often starred in the same film together. They did a lot of traditional martial arts films together. Oftentimes, Connie would play the male counterpart to Josephine's female. And so the audiences grew up watching her. Mm-hmm. And that's why they were so beloved. They were children when they watched Connie and Josephine as children making these films. And then as they entered into their teens, they watched them transition into these other genres. And that's why they were, I think, so beloved.
And that's why they had to preserve that image of them, even within these more sort of violent, more modern, more adult films. You still had to have the scene in every movie where there's like a house party and Connie Chan gets up and sings, you know, a Cantonese version of some
you know, American hit,
Wooly Bully or whatever. And also the and this was in the professional too. I forgot that when the musical numbers happen, they have subtitles with the lyrics on the screen and can't be. So I get this image in my mind of people in the theater, like I guess singing along.
No,
like,
they did. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. So you know, no matter what was going on, if you just had this like bloody brawl between Connie and Sekine right before she's going to get up, whatever happens, she's going to get up and she's going to sing, you know, Walk Don't Run or whatever, and everybody's in the theater is going to sing along. Sutene, that doesn't happen. She doesn't sing in her movies. In the first Mukalang Fa film, they do have her masquerade as a boy in one scene.
Yeah,
I sort of felt like that was sort of trying to put her in that Connie Chan mold. But other than that, she doesn't really fit into that. And not having to sort of live up to that teen idol sort of image sort of frees her to just kind of make this character, to be this character. And these films are definitely the most violent, I think, out of this genre, at least among, so I haven't seen all of them.
Yeah, I would also say out of the Jane Bond films, they're almost the ones that seem the most modern still. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if you were a moviegoer today and you were to watch them, you wouldn't find them as old-fashioned.
Right.
The cinematography and the fight choreography is very creative.
Mm-hmm. The fights are shot very dynamically. It's not that sort of, like, a lot of the old-school Cantonese martial arts film, the filming of the fights the fights themselves tend to be very mannered. The filming of them is kind of static. These films, the Mukalang Fa films, conform more to like the later sort of new wave Hong Kong action films.
It's like more running while they fight, and there's
a lot of movement,
a lot of big things going on. There's lots of people running and shooting, and
they seem pretty lavish by the standards of production standards of the Cantonese movies. And because they do have I think each of the films has a pretty, you know, the classic Bond finale where there's people running around in a lair shooting at each other with machine guns and everything.
Yeah, I think now maybe is a good time to just give a shout out to the fight choreographers behind much of these films, which is two guys who are well known to martial arts fans.
Right.
And that's Lau Garlung and Tung Gai.
Tung Gai,
And they're more known for the martial arts films that they did for Shaw Brothers, you know, starting with Chang Che's films like One-Armed Swordsman. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, and even a little before that, before they started working for Shaw's, they were doing the fight choreography for, at least half of these Jane Bond films.
Yeah,
and in this instance, for the Mukalang Fa films.
Mm-hmm.
I've always found this is, I think, was their sort of creative playground for developing these new techniques. New techniques of staging and also shooting action.
Yeah, so you definitely see that. Another one of the films, didn't they do Girl in Red? Didn't they do the choreography?
Yeah,
because that's another Connie Chan, maybe not a Jane Bond film so much, but it definitely has Jane Bond elements. But that was a film that really impressed me as far as the staging and the filming of the action, very dynamic, very, very fluid. But in these Mukalang Fa movies, the combination of these very bone-crunching, very visceral fight scenes with Sutene's very ferocious screen presence, makes these movies pretty riveting. And they also progress over time. I think we were talking about how the early films like The Black Rose, you know, these James Bond films, start out more rooted in the traditions of wuxia and the chivalrous fighter movies, and then became more modern and more Bondish. And you see that in the Mukalang Fa movies. The first one, she's presented as more like, they try and establish her as a Black Rose type figure, where she's another sort of altruistic cat burglar who robs from the rich and gives to the poor, and then is enlisted by the government or the Hong Kong police to fight spies. But she lives at home with her mom.
With her mom,
And with her sister. Her sister is her sidekick. And so she still sort of fits that good girl archetype, sort of every girl. And then the second movie in the series, they do away with a lot of that. Mom is gone.
Yep.
The two girls
Sandra
are
home.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then the two girls are somehow living in this mansion that's like very mod, and they
mm-hmm.
wear all the latest fashions. And then the bad guys in the first film, the bad guys are sort of your typical suited goons, just kind of generic underworld figures. And then the second movie, which is called Dark Heroine Shattered, the Black Dragon Gang. The Black Dragon Gang are like total cartoonish Bond villains. They wear
mm-hmm.
these like, I don't know, metallic suit jackets with these
yeah.
huge shoulder pads in
mm-hmm.
them. The leader looks like he's wearing the suit that David Byrne wore in Stop Making Sense, you know, and they have a huge lair with...
Yeah, they're so into the Black Dragon Gang identity. They have their own letterhead with Black Dragon Gang and a symbol at the top that they give people. It's like the gigantic production, and they talk to a secret boss who's projected onto a screen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, and they ride the matching scooters. They're like the scooter
yeah.
brigade, and the main bad guy is introduced in the first scene. He's throwing darts at a life-size portrait of Muk Lan Fa.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sort of changed it. It definitely gets more into sort of the whole cartoony 1960s, you know,
mm-hmm.
campy spy movie thing.
Yeah, and a lot of the Dark Heroine films, they originate from pulp novels,
right.
which are written by
Ni Kuang.
Who,
basically, if you name like five Shaw Brothers movies randomly,
yeah.
he wrote four of them.
Yeah, he wrote pretty much everything, and they're just... put out tons and tons of those books, and
right,
yeah, and the old covers are awesome and the nice painted, and they got
yeah.
all sorts of ridiculous things going on with all the adventures of the Dark Heroine,
right? Just classic pulp scenarios, and I think there was a TV series of it in the 80s, I think, as
yeah.
well. So
yeah.
she's a
TVB, I think, yeah, with in the 80s, yeah, with Angie Chu and Sharon Young, Pan, I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget who the guy was on there.
Duh,
yeah.
Doesn't matter.
No, that guy.
Doesn't matter about the guy. I mean, I think it's
yeah.
also important to point out, I don't know if it's obvious or not, but at the time in Hong Kong cinema in the 60s, there were really no male action stars on this level until Shaw Brothers started doing his
yeah.
thing with,
mm-hmm.
you know, Wang Yu and One-Armed Swordsman, but until this time, the women kind of ruled the screen as far as action films.
Right, no one really wanted to bank on male stars. They didn't think it was a good
yeah.
bet.
Yeah, I mean, Shaw tried to launch a few male Bonds, not quite successfully
yeah.
in
yeah.
my book, but the Connie and Josephine just were... Obviously, they were very popular with audiences, but they were both really good fighters, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were both trained in Cantonese opera, and so
mm-hmm.
they developed those acrobatic and martial skills.
Right.
And, you know, they grew up making swordplay films. And
mm-hmm.
so, they're very convincing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
and same with Soot Nay. I mean, I think even more so for
yeah.
her, because she is so fierce. And also, I don't know if this has something to do with, but... Tong Gai would become her husband.
Right, yeah.
So I imagine, you know, at the time they had a close working relationship.
Right.
And you really get the feeling that no punches were held.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Some of those fights between, I think also in, I think, Black Killer, is that the one where the Connie Chan and Sek Kien
yeah.
have that fight, and it's like in a foundry or
yeah.
something at the end. It's this really intense fight,
yeah.
and it's not only like a really bone crunching fight, but it's like this incredibly emotionally
yeah,
hiring thing
yes.
because that's she's gone undercover as a, in her male guise, she's wormed her way into Sekin's gang.
Yeah, and he kind of like adopted her as
right
a kind of son,
as
you know,
a son,
and
yeah.
put his trust in her, and then
yeah.
when he finds out she's undercover and has betrayed him, he is really heartbroken.
Yeah, it's actually an amazing scene because you're used to Sekin being this sort of cartoonish, sort of snidely whiplash,
yeah.
like mustache twirling bad guy, and he sort of is that in this film, but in that scene, it's he
yeah.
gives this incredibly emotional performance. all the while they're just beating the shit out of each other. So that's another, I mean, with, I guess, yeah, Black Killer, I guess, fits in the Jane Bond mold somewhat. I mean,
yeah, I think we can be kind of loose with
this. Yes, let's open our umbrella.
Because as we'll see when we go and talk about the Mandarin films a little bit, there is quite a variation from, say, the Black Rose film, which is, I like to see that as on the more traditional Chinese end of this, the Jane Bond spectrum,
right.
And something like Angel with the Iron Fists and Temptress of a Thousand Faces is more on the sort of Western influence.
End of it,
you know, with the gadgets and the sexiness.
Right.
And
Temptress of a Thousand Faces actually is a remake of a French film. Mm. It's a remake of André Unbel's Fantomas movie from 1964 or 5. Uh-huh. But it's actually a very close remake, except it substitutes female characters for the male villain and male hero of
Interesting.
Movie.
Okay.
I'll have to watch my copies then.
Pull out those Fantomas movies. And definitely, if you haven't watched Temptress of a Thousand Faces, you have to see that movie. I love that movie.
So we could probably go on forever about the Jane Bond films, but how about we just go in with our recommendations for which Jane Bond films you have to see right now, as soon as you're done listening. So let's have Todd start.
Well, I thought we were going to vote about whether we're going to...
Oh, okay. We can name them and go yay or nay.
Right. No. Well, my favorites among these, I mean, probably it's obvious from how much I've blathered on and on about them, but I mean, I'd say obviously The Black Rose... Little difficult to find, but it can be found. But it's just a really great, like I've said, very romantic, very atmospheric, but with wonderful classic pulp elements. Chow-Yun is just the best. You know, he's one of my favorite directors, so of course I'm going to say that. And then I would say definitely the second Muk Lan Fa film, which is The Dark Heroine Shattered the Black Dragon Gang. I would say that's a must-see. That's available on unsubtitled VCD. You can find it in Chinatown, if you have a Chinatown.
Not that I'm being paid by them, but yesasia.com.
Yesasia.com.
Should have it unless it's out of print.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's still there.
And this is definitely, I mean, it doesn't need the subtitles. I mean, this is a very action-packed film, and it's... got a lot of forward momentum.
Subtitles will just slow it down.
Yeah, exactly. Like we always say, life doesn't have subtitles. So. And then, of course, I would just like to shout out to one of my favorite Shaw Brothers movies, Temptress of a Thousand Faces, which weirdly is, of all the Shaw Brothers movies that were made available on DVD, for some reason that never made it to DVD. It's
except
only available
for some French.
Right.
DVD,
actually,
right?
there is a French, unsubtitled French DVD of it, which is quite nice, and I know there are some fan subs for that.
Yeah.
So if you can find that, otherwise there is a sub. Celestial did a VCD release of it, but that's a really fantastic film. That's it for me. Those are mine.
Nick, after you.
Let's see. Well, I'm going to second the second Dark Heroine film. That's probably my favorite of all of them, just because there's so much, just seems like so well put together, and like it could just be a modern film. Even, and then I think the black and white actually makes it look more gritty, like more grittier than modern. I also like the one I've seen recently, the Golden Skeleton, just because it's so ridiculously out there. just pretend that like the last 30 seconds of the film actually makes more sense, because they screw up the final thing. You know, like it's not as pulled off as well as it should be.
Mm.
And then I'll also
toy boat.
Yeah, and I also liked the Blonde-Haired Monster, which would be the prototype Jane Bond films. Unfortunately, the VCD is, like we mentioned, missing a reel, but luckily some guy uploaded a video capture off of Hong Kong TV that doesn't have the whole film either, but it has the missing section.
Right.
And the missing section has a lot of action and people getting killed and the girls fighting the giant monster, and So, well, you know, I guess tall monster, and it's a lot of fun. And
yeah, what's it's like actors? I'm sorry.
No, I mean, it's pretty much like Scooby-Doo, except for three girls instead of stoners and a dog.
So. Right. What's that actor's name who plays the blonde-haired monster? Because he's like the go-to whenever they... He's in a lot of Shaw Brothers movies whenever they just need a big hulking, like,
oh,
giant
yes,
guy.
Yes. What's his name? You know, I don't know, but he is this character actor in Can't Eat Some. I guess I don't remember him in any of the Shaw films, but I wouldn't be surprised
Shaw films.
If he's been in there because there's not too many people around as tall as he is.
Right. I mean, usually he doesn't have a big party. He's usually like the big ogre guy that the, you know.
It's like the Jaws of
like he's like one of the bad guys' minions who they send out after the
Tor
hero.
Johnson.
Yeah, right. He's the Tor Johnson of Hong Kong cinema. All right, David, what is your...
Okay, well, I'm a big Connie Chan fan, and I'm going to go with the Black Killer because... Not only as we mentioned, it has amazing fight scenes between Connie and Seth Keen, but also she kind of plays dual roles in this film as a brother and a sister.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see Connie, who was grew up, I mean, she was trained in opera to perform male roles. So you can see her doing this in contemporary guise, but it also gets sort of delightfully twisted where in the film... As the brother masquerades as the sister, and the sister masquerades as the brother, so you get this sort of dual-layered cross-dressing effect. And often you'll have both Connies, male and female, on screen at the same time using split-screen technology. It's pretty cool, and I think a good introduction to her action films. And then even though I won't say it's the most original film, I'm going to recommend Angel... with Iron Fist. Lily Ho is, I really like her. I think she's a great actress, whatever she's doing. Comedies, romances, musicals, traditional martial arts films. And she's really great in this film. She fights good. She's sexy. She changes outfits every scene, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also got another favorite of mine, Fanny Fan, and a really great cat fight scene between the two of them. Like I said, not an original film, you know, definitely kind of James Bond knockoff, but I thought very well made.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
And then my third sort of wildcat suggestion, this film I just saw last night, this Oriole the Heroine film called Wong Ong versus the Flying Tigers. And you can find that on Youku. I think we can provide the link later on when this gets published. And I'm really into the history and lineage of just film and film genres, and I was really surprised by this 1960 film starring Yu So Chow and Wu Lai Chu and Yang Yin, who are the esteemed predecessors of Connie and Josephine, and really good fighters. You can back then you can see the fight choreography shaping up and becoming modernized, and in this film you'll find Lau Garlung. He was as a young
right, he shows up
a young
in the
guy. He's
too.
In this film, and so I have
thug number three.
Yeah, right. I have to wonder what role he might have played in the choreography. And this is at this time in the early '60s, the fight choreographers weren't being credited as choreographers. So often it's one of them who shows up as an actor in the film. You know, he was probably the one who set up the fights.
In Blonde-Haired Monster, there's a nice little fight between him and Connie Chan that involves a popsicle.
Yes. I love that.
Actually, I wanted, just mentioning Lily Ho, that reminded me of something I wanted to mention, another Lily Ho film that is well worth seeing, but pretty much impossible to see, is a movie called The Brain Stealers, which was directed by Umetsugo Inoue, who directed a lot of those great musicals for the Shaws, like Hong Kong Nocturne, but he actually did a couple of spy films. Brain Stealers is one of them, starring Lily Ho, very campy, very colorful. It's, of all the films I've seen, it's probably the film that I've seen the least because of the quality of the version that I saw. I mean, I basically was able to find a disc of this that was burned off. I don't know if it was a TV broadcast or just a very worn VHS tape, but it was a mess. But I still really enjoyed the film. It's another one of those sadly, the among the Shaw Brothers films that never made it to a release on DVD from Celestial. Hopefully someday that'll be corrected. It sounds like it's still around. So consider this an appeal.
And we're, I think, all of us also waiting for Operation Lipstick.
Yes, which is
starring Ching Pei Pei.
Yes.
I think it's her, at this, during this period, her only contemporary.
Right, that's, yeah.
You know, fighting role.
Other ones. Yeah. All right, so that should wrap us up for today before we keep talking well past when our wives start yelling at us. So thanks for joining us, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. I had a great time being here. Yeah.
Great having you.
Do it again sometime.
Yes.
Yes. There's plenty more Cantonese cinema for us to talk
definitely.
About. And until next time, and until next genre, the Infernal Brains are out.
Thank you and good night.